Corporations are people, or so says a Supreme Court decision. Just ahead, why a national movement is pushing back on that decision, arguing money is not speech. Good Monday morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. We are always live at 9, and now subscribe to the daily podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. And just ahead, a closer look at the national movement that pushes back against that Citizens United decision on the High Court. We want to know what you think. Get on the line, 549-2937. Also this morning, the pros and cons of the mayor's plan to pay down the city's massive pension debt. We'll tell you about that. Plus, all the treats of home. They're all in the new Jack's in a Box. You can send one anywhere in the world. We'll tell you how. And Culpepper on the college football championships. All of that ahead this morning. But first this hour, it's a national coalition that first formed in 2010 as a response to the Supreme Court Citizens United decision establishing corporate personhood. Move to Amend is a grassroots effort with the message that money is not speech. So far, the coalition has succeeded in passing resolutions in 16 states calling for a constitutional amendment that would, in effect, roll back that decision. David Cobb, outreach director of Move to Amend, will speak tonight at UNF's Herbert University Center. Cobb is on the line now with a preview and more about this coalition and its efforts around the country. David Cobb, thanks for calling into the program.
Thank you, Melissa. It's a pleasure to be on your program.
And when it comes to Citizens United and Move to Amend, what are your questions and what are your thoughts? Get on the line with your calls, 549-2937, to join First Coast Connect. That's 549-2937. Or go to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect, email and tweet us. So let's begin, David, by going back to 2010 and this momentous decision on the High Court, Citizens United. For those that aren't familiar with that decision, let's explain what the court ruled. Can we begin there?
Absolutely. In a nutshell, the Citizens United decision overturned the McCain-Feingold campaign finance law. Let's remember John McCain, Republican, Russ Feingold, Democrat, a bipartisan agreement to try to limit money in elections. It had bipartisan support from political parties and overwhelming support from American citizens. In fact, polling data showed that the one critique that most Americans felt, regardless of their party affiliation or ideology, was it didn't go far enough, that there was still too much money in elections. Well, the Supreme Court took two legal doctrines and merged them together to take us in campaign finance law where we have never gone before. And that is the doctrine that corporations are persons with constitutional rights. And second, the doctrine that money is the functional equivalent of First Amendment protected political speech, put those two together and overturned the McCain-Feingold law and 100 years of precedent, actually, in campaign finance law that had always said that campaign finance decisions are political questions, not constitutional law questions. It basically stole local communities and state government and federal government's authority to regulate and protect the integrity of the elections. And it set off a howl of outrage across the left and the right, moderates, Democrats, Republicans, Greens, Libertarians, everyone. I mean, polling data now shows that over 80% of the American people are profoundly in profound disagreement with the Supreme Court's rationale in this case.
Who did the polling on that? Where's that data come from?
ABC News, Washington, Wall Street Journal poll.
Okay. The number to join us is 549-2937. So that ruling came in 2010. In 2012, we saw the effects of that ruling. In fact, on the campaign trail, Mitt Romney, the candidate for president, in fact, he did argue and said, look, corporations are people. Corporations are made up of people. Corporations can't, and let me just play devil's advocate when he made that argument, and he said corporations can use their money to make their arguments in the form of speech. We saw a candidate for president, Newt Gingrich, whose campaign was funded in effect by one man, Sheldon Adelson, the Las Vegas casino magnate. who was able, in the wake of that decision, to spend almost unlimited amounts of his personal funds on this one candidate. So this ruling had far-reaching effects in a number of ways, and that's just one example I can think of right off the top of my head. What are some other impacts that we have seen in the last 5 years in the wake of Citizens United?
Well, Melissa, you're correct to focus on Sheldon Adelson and Newt Gingrich because it's the glaring example of literally one billionaire keeping one candidate in the race for president. And it actually goes on and on. We've seen more money spent in every election since Citizens United, every single election cycle, the upcoming presidential election cycle. Everyone is predicting, including Move to Amend, that it's going to even burst through those records. So money is like an avalanche. It's just pouring into elections in ways that it never has before. They're becoming way more expensive, and the confidence in the integrity of the process is waning. In other words, whether you are a Democrat or a Republican, a Green, a Libertarian, the corrupting influence of money in the electoral process is something that there's virtually universal agreement in. Now, it's true Republicans yell about union money and George Soros money. Democrats yell about Sheldon Adelson and the American Legislative Exchange Council. But the point is that this is a political question about how to protect the integrity of the elections. It ought to be up to local communities in a political process to make that decision. States should debate that, and then we can hold elected officials accountable at the ballot box for what kind of campaign finance laws we want. And likewise, the U.S. Congress should be tasked with the responsibility for campaign finance laws. When the court creates the concept that corporations are persons and money is speech, they basically steal our right to self-government. They say we're going to impose the idea of how campaign finance laws will be set by the court. That's judicial activism at its worst.
Now, Move to Amend basically is trying to the end game for Move to Amend, isn't it, to get a constitutional amendment passed? And what would that amendment do?
Well, our amendment is online at movetoamend.org. You can read the language. In essence, it does two things. One, it makes it clear that artificial entities like corporations, nonprofit corporations, unions, no artificial entity possesses the inherent inalienable constitutional rights that living, breathing human beings do. And number two, it establishes the notion that money is not speech and can be regulated at the local, county, state, or federal level. It's actually quite simple, and it returns the concept of constitutional law back to where it was before the court created these legal doctrines.
Let's go to your calls. What are your thoughts about the Citizens United Supreme Court decision and Move to Amend? 549-2937. Jeff is in St. Augustine. Hi, Jeff. Good morning.
Oh, hey, good morning. Yeah, I mean, I think there's like a 100% correlation between, you know, our political dysfunction and, you know, the money. Because, you know, you don't get any money from people if you're just doing your job and passing laws and compromising. I mean, you're you know, you get money if you do stupid things and say crazy stuff and, you know, refuse to work with anybody. And, I mean, you look at Rafael Cruz, you know, he's gotten the majority of his money for his campaign from, I think, four or five families. And it's largely because of his climate denying views and his apocalyptic end times, you know, craziness.
And let's talk about whether it's Ted Cruz or any candidate that is accepting large donations, Democrat or Republican, David, basically the effect of the Citizens United decision has removed the limit on contributions. That's an oversimplification, but in effect,
but it's pretty much the case.
That's
isn't it,
pretty
Melissa?
Much the case. I mean, so now basically candidates can accept much larger individual contributions.
Well, there's no doubt. In fact, you're correct. It's an oversimplification. But if we actually take Citizens United and its companion case, McCutcheon versus Federal Election Commission, the limits are now just so high. Is it collectively? It's up to several hundred thousand dollars that one individual can give to directly to congressional candidates. Now, that's just the direct contribution. What is completely and utterly unlimited are what are called, quote, independent expenditures, which is a line that is so muddy that it doesn't even exist, really. All it means is if I am a billionaire and I want to support a candidate, I can literally spend as much money as I want on advertisements and so forth, as long as the money doesn't filter directly through the candidate's campaign committee.
What about the countervailing argument, though, David, that this is a capitalist system, and that if a wealthy individual wants to spend his or her money in this manner, that he should be free or she should be free to do so?
Well, I guess then we would have to acknowledge that we're really not having political discourse and elections in which we debate ideas and acknowledge one person, one vote as a principle. And instead, we're ceding and acknowledging the fact that we're going to allow the billionaire class to rule this country and that we're going to actually turn elections into auctions. Let's just acknowledge that, because that is the logical conclusion to the premise that you have set up in your question.
We want your calls on the Citizens United decision in 2010, the Supreme Court ruling allowing unlimited campaign contributions around candidates and elections, and the Move to Amend Coalition. They come to UNF tonight. We'll tell you where you can go to hear more about this in just a moment, and we'll go to your calls in a moment at 549-2937. Emails and tweets go to wjctnews.org/FirstCoastConnect. And in fact, the Citizens United group, David, for the people might have heard about the decision, but they might not know what Citizens United was or is. It was a conservative lobbying group that wanted to air a film critical of Hillary Clinton back in 2008 and advertise it during television broadcasts during the 2008 Democratic primaries, when Hillary Clinton was running against Barack Obama for the Democratic nomination for president. Chief Justice John Roberts issued the majority opinion upholding Citizens United's wish to do so. That's where it all began, correct?
Well, that's true, but let's acknowledge the fact that it was a Bush appointee at the Federal Election Commission that acknowledged that that effort by Citizens United violated the McCain-Feingold law. Again, I'm willing to debate the whether or not it's a good idea legislatively to just allow all the money in elections, but I do want to come back to the principle of who gets to decide campaign finance law. Is it we the people through our elected representatives, which is what the Democratic Republican form of government tells us we're supposed to be allowed to do, in fact, tasked to do, or are we just going to let the court tell us what we what our campaign finance laws are going to be? Because that's what the Roberts Court did. The Roberts Court took away the authority of Congress and the responsibility of Congress to make campaign finance law and legislated from the bench.
Now, you currently have 16 states that have passed resolutions calling for this amendment. Let's explain the process, the road ahead for you to get this as the 28th Amendment to the Constitution, which is your goal.
Yes. Well, Melissa, it is, as we say, a heavy lift. Amending the Constitution may be the most difficult thing you can do in politics in this country because it's so important. But it has been done 27 times. We know that. And it's been done at important moments in history. For example, women getting the right to vote, abolishing slavery, dealing with trade unions, the civil rights movement. I mean, the idea of amending the Constitution is difficult, but it is also a reflection of how serious we are at Move to Amend to make the promise of a democratic republic a reality. The numbers are pretty simple. You need three-quarters of Congress to make a proposal for an amendment, or you need two-thirds of the states to call for a constitutional convention. Either of the two ways to start formally the process still requires three-quarters of the state legislatures to ratify it. So it really is going to be a mass movement that actually is shifting the political culture. But the good news is it's already working. As you say, 16 states have called for this amendment. But in addition to that, 600 communities have passed local resolutions of support of our effort. And we put this on the ballot in over 300 communities where ordinary voters get an opportunity to vote on whether or not they support this effort. And Melissa, we've won every single one of them. And it does include, you know, San Francisco and Boston and Madison, Wisconsin, you know, the liberal bastions. But you know where else we've won? We've won in Salt Lake City, Utah. We've won in Devlin, Wisconsin, the hometown of Republican Tea Party Governor Scott Walker. They haven't voted for a Democrat for president or Congress in 40 years in Devlin. We were on the ballot there, and we won. We won a statewide initiative in Montana, which might be one of the most politically, culturally conservative states in the union. And in a statewide vote, we won 74% of the vote. So when I tell you that this has appeal across Democrat, Republican, liberal, conservative lines, it's not just rhetoric. It's actually backed up by objective numbers.
George at the beaches. Hi, George. How are you?
Well, thanks. On the corporations being people, two quick points. The first, you know, the First Amendment to the Constitution does give us the right peaceably to assemble, and you could argue that that's all corporations are, but I think the fundamental difference is that when we citizens join civic groups, it's a one-person, one-vote thing, whereas in corporations, it's a $1, one-vote system. So really what corporations are is collections of dollars rather than people. Granted, people own those dollars, but it's, again, not a one-person, one-vote thing. More importantly for me, you know, citizens or people, people can join the armed forces like I did when I was a young whippersnapper and hump a pack and carry a rifle. And when I see a corporation joining the armed forces and doing that sort of thing, I'd be willing to accept that corporations are people, too. Thank you.
Okay, thanks for your opinion, George. John in Jacksonville. Hey, John. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. My main concern is basically, what are they buying? When they $10 million, aren't they buying our political system? And what I'm basically meaning is our tax laws. I mean, it's legal now to put corporations put money offshore to avoid paying taxes. That means the average citizen is going to be picking up that tab. So it looks like the people are losing.
John, thanks. David Kopp.
Well, I agree with both of your callers. I mean, the reality is, again, Move to Mend is not anti-corporation. We think corporations play a useful role in society. They are ways to assemble people and money and resources to do things. That's fine. However, the concept of a constitutional right is sacred, because when you're exercising a constitutional right in court, what you're saying is there's something that the political system has done, some law, local, state, or federal law, that has been passed that is infringing upon your inherent inalienable rights as a human being, your right to assemble, your right to speak, your right to worship or not worship as you see fit, etc. And this is the point. Corporations are important business tools, but they're just tools. They do not have a heart, a mind, a conscience, a soul. They are simply artificial entities and tools. And if corporations have constitutional rights, it means corporate lawyers can go into court to overturn environmental protection laws, worker safety laws, public health laws, and campaign finance laws. And that's what the court has created, a system where we, the people, cannot properly govern ourselves. That's the reason that Republicans and Democrats, Greens, Libertarians alike, are actually joining this movement. And we're winning everywhere we go.
Mark is in Julington Creek. Hi, Mark.
Good morning, Melissa.
Good morning.
If the question had been rephrased, the vote, if you will, had been rephrased to ask, are you as an individual willing to say that a richer person, that a person with more money or a corporation with more money, their vote carries more weight than yours does as an individual with less money, I don't think this ever would have come into being, because that's all it really is. It's a simple question. Are we allowing money to vote for us instead of us having our individual vote? Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Mark. Okay, here are just a few tweets that have come into the show. Let's get a couple of those on the air. Here's one from James. Here's the local implications of this. Shad Khan just put $100,000 into Mayor Lenny Curry's PAC, trying to run the table in Jacksonville. So, James Cobb, or excuse me, David Cobb, tonight you will be speaking about this at UNF's Herbert University Center at 6:30 p.m. Tell us a little bit about this event.
Well, what I'm going to be doing is spending about 45 minutes giving the social historical context of what a corporation is, where it came from under law. I'll go all the way back to Roman times and the creation of the initial corporations as processes to facilitate private money being put into public good. I'll talk about how the transnational corporation of the East India Corporation began. I'll talk about the founding of this country and how corporations were once very tightly politically controlled by the founders. And then I'll talk about what happened in the Citizens United decision. And lastly, saving the best for last, Melissa, we'll talk about this growing movement across Florida and the country of ordinary people coming together to build a movement based on the principle of a democratic republican form of government that invites liberals, conservatives, and moderates alike who disagree on issues to agree on the principle of a democratic republican form of government to come together and peacefully change this country.
David Cobb, thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Melissa.
He's David Cobb, Outreach Director of Move to Amend. Again, that's tonight at UNF's Herbert University Center, 6:30 p.m. Well, much more still ahead later. College football's national champion will be crowned tonight, Culpepper, with the preview of that. But up next, a look at the pros and cons of Mayor Curry's pension payment plan. Back in a moment.
Legal and political segments on First Coast Connect, brought to you by Farrah and Farrah.
Greetings and a happy new year to all.
Join us Saturday for Swamp Radio's New Year's celebration, recorded live at the Florida Theater, featuring songs, stories, sketches, and conversations which celebrate Northeast Florida's arts and culture scene. Swamp Radio, Saturday at 4 on 89.9 WJCT.
This is Michael Feldman. You know what makes a great holiday gift? Me. Or if you can't give me, how's about tickets to see me live? WJCT and the Flora Theater are proud to bring Michael Feldman's What Do You Know Live to Jacksonville on February 20th. Do the quiz, have some great guests and music, and possibly defect from Wisconsin once and for all. Tickets now at the Florida Theater box office by phone at 904-355-2787 or online at floridatheater.com. Hope to see you there.
Sponsored in part by Folio Media House.
Business is booming for America's temp agencies, but some workers are more equal than others.
They would ask for things like, we need country boys.
Or a person must have a corporate style, and those sorts of codes would be used to indicate send only white applicants.
To see this happening in America, it's insane. It's mind-boggling.
On the next Reveal from the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX.
Thursday at 1 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, the Jacksonville City Council meets tomorrow night. That entire 19-member body has sponsored a new bill that would repurpose the Better Jacksonville plan with a half-cent sales tax to pay down the city's massive unfunded pension liability. It's now in the hundreds of millions of dollars. Jacksonville Mayor Lenny Curry says he's willing to go to the voters to get their approval, if necessary, to get a referendum on this matter. Jacksonville attorney Tad Delegal, who specializes in labor and employment issues, joins us now with his thoughts and concerns about this plan. Tad Delegal, thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Melissa.
And when it comes to Lenny Curry's half-cent sales tax proposal to pay down pension debt in the city, we want your calls. Give us a call with your thoughts, 549-2937, to join the show. Okay, Tad, you served as the counsel for the Fraternal Order of Police from 1993 to 2007. You also served as a member of the Pension Task Force under previous Mayor Alvin Brown. You wrote a letter to the editor of the Times Union the other day expressing concerns and pushing back against the mayor's plan, which calls for a 401k type system or defined contribution plan. Why are you raising concerns about this? For example, the Times Union editorial board came out the other day and said, this is the best way to go. Why are you differing with this way to go?
Well, first of all, there are two parts to the pension matter. Okay. First of all, there's the question of paying off the unfunded liability.
Sure.
And that's, I think the mayor has come up with a good plan for that, coming up with a funding source, and that's what the task force asks to do. The problem is that he is pairing that with a 401k type system.
And that's more of your issue.
That's the issue. We on the task force looked at that, and we looked at all possibilities, and the problem is that we've had this history of kicking the can down the road, doing things that look good now but cause us problems later. And it will undoubtedly create us problems in the future for a 401k plan. If you actually, A.G. Gankarski wrote a column this weekend on Florida politics, and he cited, he mentioned my letter. He also cited Palm Beach's experiences with this. They did the same thing. They went to a 401k type system. They're having such problems with it now that they're seeking to repeal it and go to something else. The problems they're having, right now they have a police force. 60% of that police force has less than 3 years experience. You have people leaving in droves. The problem with a 401k system is it doesn't keep people there for the long term, and you need that in public safety.
And the reason for that is people don't see it as the type of department they want to retire in?
No.
Because of the benefit package?
No. The problem is in the design of the plan. And it is, we've had state after state do this too. West Virginia, Alaska, some other states. They've gone to 401k. They've seen the huge turnover. And they've gone back to the defined plans. Because the defined plan keeps you in place for 20, 25, 30 years. You don't get paid until the end of the benefit, and there's a disincentive to leaving. You lose your investment if you leave before you're vested, and you lose most of the value. A 401k plan, you can leave at any time. So the whole design for the pension is, the current traditional pension, is to keep you there for the long term. The design of the 401k plan is to do what they've done in private industry, which is to let people move from job to job. It costs $100,000 to train a new police officer. You don't need turnover in a police department. And when you have it, you have substantial problems in the police department. Not the least of which is, frankly, we have concerns about police judgment, use of judgment. We have concerns about public safety people coming to us. I don't think that Jacksonville is going to want to wake up in 5 years and realize that, you know, the rescue personnel coming to revive your grandfather are all 25 years old. Or the police officers who are making life and death situation are all under age 30 or fairly new or rookies. And that's the real concern. We're setting ourselves up for another crisis that is going to happen. It's not speculation. It's happened everywhere it's been implemented. And we're just setting ourselves up for another crisis.
What about the city's position that we simply can't afford to keep the status quo, though?
No, actually, the 401k system is a lot more expensive than what we've got. The task force came along and we came up with a plan. And the current defined benefit plan for new employees costs 9.1%. 4% of that is covered by state revenues. It's not paid locally, so we're talking 5%. No 401k plan imaginable would be less than about 10%. So we're talking more money. Plus, 401k plans actually cost more money to administer than do defined traditional benefit plans, about another 1% of payroll.
What's your response then to this editorial, basically buttressing the mayor's proposal? He would create a new plan with competitive benefits and salaries for new hires. New generations would be less likely to build new unfunded liabilities.
Well, let me say this. Everybody's good, and I commend the mayor for coming out with a good plan, but everybody's gotten on this bandwagon over a period of 7 days. He announced it last Monday. Everybody signed off on it. Nobody's analyzed this. We spent months and months and months and meeting after meeting on the task force looking at all these alternatives. One of the things we looked at is the state of Texas. The state of Texas has a hybrid plan, which is basically a 401k plan. Its turnover rates for police officers are 20% higher than is the state of Florida's that has a defined benefit plan. I mean, you can't, I mean, just by nature, this is a crisis that's going to happen. And when I say crisis, we're going to wind up paying more, much, much more, because we're going to say, okay, everyone's leaving. This is what's happened in Palm Beach and other places. Let's give them bonuses to stay. Let's up their pay. This is going to be a financial mess in addition to a public safety mess in a very short time.
So how do you see this going forward, since you don't see the current proposal as viable? In a perfect world, how would you, Ted Delegal, design it?
Simply say, don't tie the passage of this to the adoption of a 401k type plan. Look at this, the facts. Look at the design. Look at what's best for the city in the long run and say, let's go with the funding source. But there's no logical reason to tie this new funding source the mayor has identified to a 401k plan.
But you're okay with the idea of a half-cent sales tax?
Yeah, I think we have to pay for this. Frankly, we as a public didn't fund this thing for 20 years. We didn't adequately fund it. The chickens came home to roost. And now we've got a big bill, and we've got to figure out a way to pay for it.
Linda in Arlington. Hey, Linda, thanks for calling in. Good morning.
Good morning. I think you had this subject come up a little bit last week, and I called, but I didn't get on. And everything the guy said is true. The whole point of the people we have in office in Florida is to cut taxes, no more taxes, no more taxes. And we have gotten to the point we do not rate well in Florida as a state or Duval as a county in education. And we're getting, and in other areas, environmental control, everything's going down because heaven forbid if somebody has to pay taxes. The upper class does not understand the necessity for funding government. And exactly what he's talking about with 401k is what's going to happen. But it's okay because in the short term, it's cheap. And the guy in there gets to go out of office and say, we save so much money, blah, blah. But let me point out, this unfunded liability, how many times in the last, say, 5-6 years have we given millions of dollars to the Jaguars? And there is not a mainstream economist in the country that has been able to prove that it brings anything to the community. It always costs the community. Yeah, and you just mentioned on the news that the mayor just got a $100,000 contribution for Con for his reelection campaign. What does that say? And I just don't understand when people are going to wake up and hold the city council and our elected figures responsible for this. We have to have good police service. If anything else, the one thing that's going on in this country right now is the problem we're having with police and the fire department. Those people at the fire department, they're some of the best people in the community. And if we want to not pay them, already they have a problem getting the medical benefits they need because of the hazardous conditions they work under sometimes. So I just think this is just the city being stupid again. And I guess I'll listen to what you say afterwards.
Okay, Linda. Thank you. Gary on the west side. Go ahead, Gary.
Hi, good morning.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I've got a question for Mr. Delegal.
Yes.
I know you already commented about these 401ks in other places failing or having to switch back the defined benefit plans that they previously had. And I know that the Florida legislature is also contemplating a 401k plan for state employees. And so I just wonder, with that background of failure with these systems or these plans, are these political efforts, or is this just are these party politics? I was wondering if you could comment on that.
Okay, sure.
You know, I don't know what they are. It's not based in logic. I think people look at this, and the standard reaction is, we've got them in the private industry, so why don't we have them in the public sector? And there's problems in the public sector, and then, you know, therefore, it must be the design of the plan. In truth, the Florida retirement system is very healthily funded. There's no reason to really jettison that program. I would say, though, that, you know, it may be politics. I don't know. I don't know all those the motivations. I think it's more of just sort of a prejudice against things. People think, gosh, this has to be bad because I don't have it. The problem is, I think we need to look at what the differences are in the public sector and the private sector. In the private sector, you want turnover. You want, you know, you want people to you know, want it, but it's not something that you're really concerned about in hiring. In the public sector, we need folks to stay a long period of time so that they develop expertise, they develop the rank structure that's involved in public safety. You need people who are experienced, who take the sergeant's exam, the lieutenant's exam. You need those things. And you also want people, one of the things that the public safety pensions do, I don't know how many police shows you've seen where people say, I'm not going to risk my pension on that. The pensions are designed to be forfeited if public safety officers betray certain trust. And that's a huge incentive to stay on and do what you're supposed to do. And it's sort of like paying a contractor. You know, you don't pay a contractor all up front. You pay them half at front and half at the end. And so what we're doing is, with these public safety employees, we're saying, we're going to pay you a good amount of your pay at the end of your employment with a traditional pension. And we're doing that so we get good service, we're putting you in a very risky job, and we know that you're going to get paid afterwards.
We'll continue to follow this. Thanks for sharing your thoughts with us.
Sure. Thank you.
He's Jacksonville Labor and Employment Attorney Tad Delegal. We'll follow this story as it goes forward. Still to come, sports with Cole. Plus, sending the treats of home anywhere in the world. In a moment, we'll tell you all about Jack's in a Box.
This is the sound of drama. This is the sound of your community.
Good morning, and live from Studio 5, this is First Coast Connect on 89.
Stay connected. Stay informed. Enjoy live streaming of your favorite local WJCT and PBS and NPR content, all free from your devices. The WJCT app, available now in the Apple App Store and Google Play.
To me, being a gangster was better than being president of the United States.
That's Ray Liotta in Martin Scorsese's film Goodfellas. On the next Fresh Air, Liotta talks about his movies and his life, including meeting the real wise guy his character in Goodfellas was based on. Liotta co-stars in the new NBC series Shades of Blue. Join us.
Weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Postscript of the Union, the last State of the Union for Obama.
So let me be clear.
Will we hear warnings about global entanglement, the military-industrial complex, corruption of paper money? President Barack Obama speaks, plus a Republican response and a debate. All coming up this week on The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI, Public Radio International. Weekdays at 2 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, Jacksonville is a beautiful city with rich Florida culture. If you, a friend, or a loved one have lived here and moved away, you can now experience Jacksonville from the convenience of your own home anywhere in the world. Jacksonville in a Box sends custom boxes of local snacks and souvenirs to everyone missing a taste of the First Coast, whether it's a soldier, a college student, or someone who's just relocated. Johnny Vidal is the founder of Jacks in a Box, and he joins us now. And by the way, you brought a box with you. So exciting. Good morning.
Good morning. I did.
Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
So how'd you come up with this idea?
So it started off as a kind of a hobby. A friend of mine was stationed overseas and wanted some taste of home, and I just threw some things in a box and sent him over.
That's simple.
Like
a care pack. I mean, my mom used to send me care packages when I went to college. It's the same thing.
It's exactly the same. And some of his people he was stationed with saw them and wanted one, and then it grew from there.
So how did you decide what to put in the box? Mm-hmm.
So we tried to think of the most iconic items in Jacksonville. So if someone was visiting, what would you tell them to go see or go
sure.
do? So we have Bono's in there, Peter Brook, of course, Suns, Armand FC, Jacksonville Jaguars, and then just a couple of personalized items, a poster and a postcard of a vintage Jacks.
Very nice. Mm-hmm. And when the business began, did it just sort of spread through word of mouth?
It was all word of mouth in the
yeah.
beginning. Just friends, neighbors, families, friends of friends. And it got to be out of hand to where I couldn't handle it anymore.
Really?
So I actually reached out to the ARC Jacksonville.
Uh-huh.
So we partnered with them. And they're the ones who put the boxes together now, which is amazing. We're really happy we kept it local. And it employs special needs adults.
Where are you shipping now? Is it how many countries? How many states?
I think we lost track. We've done every state. I don't know if we've done every country. But
you've done every state in the union.
Yeah,
that's fantastic.
Yeah, it's been amazing. Lots of military. So it's been a really good process.
How
so
much
far.
Is a box?
So it's this larger box you see, which I know you can't see the items in it, is about $54.99.
Okay.
Free shipping anywhere in the U.S. and free shipping to all military. And then we have a smaller box, which is just the edible snack items. That's about $34.99. Free shipping again anywhere in the U.S.
And you'll go worldwide?
We'll go worldwide, yeah.
Wow.
The extra $20 for international, but it's free military. So.
Had you ever run a business before?
I do have some business experience. I never run a mail order business or a physical type business, but I'm up for the challenge. It was good.
Has it been just a wild ride for you?
Oh, it's been amazing. The response has been great. The ARC Jacksonville has been great. All the vendors have been amazing. We get in contacts all the time for people that wanted to do new boxes. And this year, we're actually planning on doing a few different things. One is a subscription box, so it'll be monthly items.
Oh, nice.
And then also themed items. So we'll be doing like a Jacksonville Beach or a brewery's box or a coffee roaster's box. So
oh,
we'd be doing themed
very
boxes.
Very cool. Are you going to do maybe like I'm already trying to help you think of some new some themes. Like how about neighborhood themes?
Yeah,
like,
you could break it down by neighborhood.
A San Marco theme or maybe a Springfield theme mm-hmm. or a West Side theme. I don't know. I'm just thinking
there's
out
so
loud
many
here.
Options. That's the cool thing is there's so many amazing little niches and neighborhoods and amazing businesses in town.
Oh, wow. So you've got big plans, don't you?
We have big plans to scale.
This is so exciting. Well, I'm so excited, too, that you brought the box with you because you know those treats aren't going to last long.
I know.
You're in a newsroom. You know,
oh, yeah.
It's
they go
like
fast.
These people are vultures. What can I say?
That's all right. We have plenty of boxes for you guys.
Excellent. Well, again, it's Jacksonville in a Box. Founder Johnny Vidal here. We have with us, Bono's barbecue sauce, cotton candy from, where is it from?
Papa John's.
Papa John's. Mm-hmm. Sweet Pete's taffy, Peter Brook chocolate, Bold Bean coffee goes in this thing sometimes, right? No?
Not yet.
You're working on that. Mm-hmm. All kinds of goodies. And this is just a wonderful thing to send to someone who maybe is stationed overseas, a college student who's left home, a friend who's moved away. The website is easy to find. Just search Jacksonville in a Box. Jaguars memorabilia, an Intuition Ale koozie, and lots of other fun stuff inside the box. So thanks so much for joining us, and thanks for bringing the fun stuff, too.
Oh, thanks for having me. Enjoy the box.
Culpepper's up in just a moment.
Follow what's happening at WJCT, even when you're away from your radio. You can follow WJCT on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can listen live online to WJCT-FM at wjct.org/listen, or on iTunes Radio or TuneIn Radio. And you can hear all of your favorite WJCT-FM shows anytime on demand on iTunes and Stitcher. Wherever you are, WJCT is there.
Welcome back. Well, finally, this hour, college football's national champion will be crowned tonight.
I'm a pepper, he's a pepper, she's a pepper, we're a pepper. Wouldn't you like to be a pepper too?
Cole Pepper's here now to tee things up for Alabama versus Clemson. You know, I know we're talking football, but I'm looking at that taffy and Peterburg chocolate he brought, and I can't get my eyes off it.
Well, if you like, I can, you know, what we call in the business, dance a bit for you here, if you need to dig into the...
No. I'm sorry. Let me get my eyes back on the ball here. Alabama v. Clemson. Very exciting.
Yeah, and we get number one against number two, and, you know, some years there has been some thought about, well, did we get the right teams? And, of course, last year they implemented a four-team college football playoff system to ensure that every team that deserved to compete for the national championship got a chance. In any year, this was going to be the matchup, one against two. And so here we go. Here are sort of the defining factors on each side. On Alabama's side, in their favor, you have the Nick Saban factor. Four national championships as a head coach, including three at Alabama since 2009. You have the Clemsoning factor.
The Clemsoning factor?
Yes. So Clemsoning has become a verb. You know, Clemson's had some great teams through the years, but it seems like they always find the way to underperform in a key game. Many of those games, by the way, have been against Florida State. And so it's, you know, like Tebowing, it has become Clemsoning.
So if I choke at a critical moment, I should say that I Clemson?
Well, you could. And
I'm never going to do that, by the way.
You would never choke at a
critical
moment. No way. No, you're too good for that. And
hopefully not, anyway.
So you wonder, is that just sort of college football lore that gets built up,
yeah,
or is it an actual thing? Is it really going to be a factor? And sometimes it's a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Oh.
When you know, people talk about it and ask about it so much that in the back of their minds, this thing crops up. And I think back to the 2008 college basketball national championship where Memphis was a bad free throw shooting team, and John Calipari kept getting asked about that. And he said, no, it's not going to be an issue, not going to be an issue. As it turned out, his team missed some critical free throws down the stretch. Game went to overtime, and Kansas winds up winning the national championship as a result. So hearing those questions from the media can certainly impact that.
Sure.
Then the X factor is Deshaun Watson, the Clemson quarterback. And here's why I think he's the X factor. Not only is he a terrific quarterback, Heisman finalist, but I expect Alabama to really control the line of scrimmage. They're more physical. They always control offensive and defensive lines of scrimmage. But Watson is a mobile quarterback who can make plays, and he's a guy that even when the protection breaks down, can turn things into a positive. So
okay,
Here's my pick. After all that.
Wait. It's Pepper's pick. All right.
Here it is.
Drum roll, please.
I think so many times these games tend to get out of control a little bit. You think they're going to be close. Alabama's been installed as a 7-point favorite by the folks in Las Vegas, but I think it's actually going to go more than that. I have Alabama winning 30-17.
Ooh, okay. You heard it here first.
We'll see how close I am based on what happens tonight.
Okay, let's move on to the NFL, the wild card weekend. All four games won by the team on the road.
Yeah, first time that has ever happened in the wild card round. All four road teams won. Kansas City shut out Houston. Pittsburgh out uglied Cincinnati.
Oh, my God. Can I just tell you that our house was very loud the other night.
Because of that game.
Very loud,
yeah, there were some cheap shots, and among other things, and fans throwing bottles at players.
There were things being thrown at our house. There was much yelling. There was much hilarity, and then much gnashing of teeth. That's all I'm going to say.
And Cincinnati moves on, goes home, and Pittsburgh moves on.
Yes.
Seattle won in Minnesota in 3 below temperatures on a missed field goal in the final minute by the Vikings. And Green Bay handled Washington. So now that allows the teams that had the top seeds a bye week. They will wind up hosting the second weekend. Denver and New England in the AFC, Carolina and Arizona in the NFC. As for the Jaguars, they fired their defensive coordinator, Bob Babich, last week. So the question is, where do they go from here?
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's a question whether you go with experience or do you go with a young and hungry coach. If you go with an experienced coach, he's more likely to be able to step in right away and understand the dynamic of things. And I think in some regard, either a former head coach who's a former defensive coordinator makes a lot of sense, because maybe it's a one-year stopover for him where he can prove himself somewhere else. And remember, if the Jaguars don't win in 2016, Gus Bradley's gone.
Right, of course, yeah. Unfortunately, but yeah.
It's time to do it. So somebody like a Lovie Smith, the former defensive coordinator of the Bears and former head coach of the Bears and Tampa Bay, has been let go. He's out there and available and is a terrific coach.
Can I just tell you my Lovie Smith story?
Go for it, yeah.
My cousin Grant lives in Chicago. I used to live there. He's still up there, lives in the city. He went to look at a condo one day, fully furnished, and the realtor said, if you're interested in this condo with every stick of furniture in it, it's for sale at such and such a price. And my cousin said, okay, you know, I guess so. And it looks really nice. And then they said the person really wants to sell it as soon as possible. And they want to get rid of all the furniture that's in it, too. So, but you have to take it at the asking price. And you have to take it today.
Let me guess.
Lovie Smith.
Yeah. He was moving to Tampa.
Yeah, it was Lovie Smith.
Yeah, there you go.
So anyway.
So there may be a condo coming up for sale in Tampa soon. The other option is to go with a young and hungry coach that allows Gus Bradley to have more of a hands-on role in terms of defensive play calling. Of course, Bradley was a former defensive coordinator in Seattle. And one name we're hearing there is the Falcons secondary coach and former Gator, Marquand Manuel, who has only been a position coach for 1 year. He's only 36 years old, so we'll see if that's the direction they go.
And last but not least, big news from the Armada.
Yeah, going to be a great preseason for the Armada. They've announced that there are three Major League Soccer teams that they will host here in Jacksonville in the preseason. We already knew about the Philadelphia Union on February 6th, but the following week, Orlando City comes to town to really spark that rivalry.
First time
those two clubs will ever meet. And then 2 weeks after that, the Eastern Conference finalists New York Red Bulls come to the First Coast. Great list of preseason matches for Tony Meola's first season as the head coach of the Armada. Regular season starts in April, and we expect the full schedule out sometime this week.
Now, that'll be exciting for you, Cole, the face, the voice of the Armada. So lots of sports to talk about as we move through the first quarter of the new year. Follow Cole on Twitter, at Cole Pepper. As always, great to see you.
Thanks, Melissa.
That's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. The show theme, composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony Orchestra's Pyotr Chepchik. Catch our podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. And next on Diane Rehm, many gun rights supporters point to the Second Amendment of the Constitution, which they say guarantees the right to bear arms. Many supporters of gun control disagree. A panel of legal scholars debates the meaning and context of the Second Amendment, the role of the Supreme Court, and what it all means for the ongoing debate over gun policy. That's coming up next. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT-FM Jacksonville, your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.